appropriations, budget appropriations committee of the National Assembly. Are we supposed to be here as well? Because I received an invitation to be here, but I don't see any of the other members of the National Assembly Appropriations Committee here.
Yeah, Honourable Robbie, you were invited yesterday. We had the same situation. Only one member from the NA attended because of other meetings. It's a clash of meetings. So you are welcome if you want to stay. You're welcome to stay because you are invited. And the issues also concern the committees in the NA. But this is it's a joint session. Just waiting for the technical people to connect all the ITs before we start. Honorable Mashile, Mr. Kami. Chantal, can I ask you please to get those members inside? Meeting is inside, not outside. Honourable members, you're welcome to the quarter of the meeting to go and fetch yourself a cup of tea, water, etc. Because we know we're right for a formal tea break. We will be heading to the end of this meeting. Officials in all departments are here from Pretoria and are booked on flights. I still have to contemplate the traffic between Parliament and the airport. Thank you for the water. Mr. McKeesha, are you ready with the IT system? Members, while we're waiting, are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready, sir, but I will need people from corporate government to come and sit here so that they can do the job.
There's a request. Can someone assist? Honourable members, did you all receive the presentation of the Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Trade? Is it mentioned? The presentation, who didn't receive it, was circulated, Mr. Rento. So this is mine. No, this is my copy. Thank you. permanent education public works over here?
Yeah.
There you are, the corner. And Shoga, there Shoga. The other department itself didn't indicate anything, so we take it that they won't be here. We also didn't receive any documentation from them. I'm going to ask then, yes, the proceedings will be that we will give the department 15 minutes to do their presentation. Education says they need 10. 15 minutes to do their presentation, and then the members will engage questions. We want to make the ruling because of the time problem, that we only take 1 hour of questions. Yesterday we had one question with 13 subsections. So please formulate your question that it's a better formulate. The other point is that you must look at your parliamentary program. We will have joint meetings with the NA's Standing Committee on Finance and Appropriation from the 18th onwards into August, to the end of August. So that program will also be in your pigeonholes. Just watch for it. And lastly, our committees visit to municipalities in provinces. Before we left for the constituency period, I requested honorable members to go back during the constituency period and to come back with information and forward it to the secretary of the committee, which municipalities in that specific province do you want us to go and visit. Until today, we haven't received any from the Northern Cape. We had a meeting with the Auditor General, Mr. Kimmy, in Kimberley, and he gave us the Auditor General's report on the municipalities in the Northern Cape. And we will, with the management committee of this committee, we will sit and make a selection and submit it to this committee for approval and to see how we're going to go about it. Any questions? Honourable members, yes, I've got a problem with this, with the temperature in this this venue, and I requested them to cool us down because it's like a cave. So they are trying to do their best. That's all I can tell you. Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs. Who will lead the discussion? Mister? Right. Can you please introduce your team, yourself and your team, and then you may proceed.
Okay, I think it's about 5 or 6 of us here. We are led by Dr. Matanwa Tswana. Then there is myself, Mzilikas Manike, who will do the presentation. There is the colleague here, Mr. Kwadelan Mulomo. There is Mr. William Rampele, there is Mr. Pangi Matomela, and there is Dr. Lucky Matomo Wan. So I will quickly run through the presentation.
Noted, Honorable, please hold. Noted, Honorable Forum.
Yeah. Running
through the names, don't know who that one is, who that one is. Would they just
stand up and just so that you can view
their,
and their titles as well?
Honorable Shigoni, welcome. You sit here on my quick right. I missed you. Welcome here. Honorable Shigoni is the chairperson of the Standing Committee on Appropriation in the National Assembly. Members of that committee is also present here, so welcome to all of them. Welcome. On the hand, please put it up high. Understood? Oh. Right, let's start introduction again. Please name yourself, stand up so that you can see, etc. We won't take photos.
Jefferson, I request that we just introduce ourselves.
providing the technical advice to the ministry on the account that is currently.
I think we appreciate to know Mr. Bakano. But I think that you ask that everyone identifies his or her portfolio, you know, and what position.
Yes.
Yeah, please, it's a simple question. Come up with a response that we can carry on with the meeting. The introduction can't take too long.
Well, I have to discuss my income, the executive manager responsible for intergovernmental fiscal relations. Thank you. My name is Kwatrani Morogo. I am responsible for infrastructure development finance, and I'm a senior manager at the department. My name is Tony William Ramsey, Senior Manager, Monitor of Finance Monitoring in the Department.
The Park Matumela, Executive Manager, Fiscal Performance Monitoring and Support. I work with William and all of them.
My name is Plaki Masawawane, and I'm responsible for the Equitable Fiscal Transfer. I'm the Senior Manager in the Department.
So that's the whole team. If the Gender Commission were here today, you were in trouble. Thank you for that. All the members, before I forget, there will be a list circulating. Some of you request transport because we might be going after 5 o'clock. That's to your residence, the Boria Park, Pelican Park, or Acacia Park. So if that list comes to you, please complete it and give it to Chantel, our secretary. To the department, you may proceed with your presentation. We request you to go straight into your recommendations. We met with the FSC yesterday. They took us through their recommendations, etc. We deliberated on that. So you can go straight into your response to the FSC.
Okay, and that you will start with slide number 3. When in reference to the matters around the policy review on provincial government, we wish to think that the department completed the work on the policy review in December 2008 and presented to the extended cabinet Lekota in January this year, or not. And in this regard, the intention is for cabinet, for us to get cabinet to make a pronouncement on the policy review process. So that is in relation to both the provincial and local government within the next few months. So that is for information purposes. Well, with regard to some of the issues which have been raised regarding, I'm in slide number 4 now. Slide number 4. Okay, yes. Yeah, with regard to the actual, some of the things which we'll be touching on is with regard to chapter 1, 2, 6, and 7, and 8. But we have also taken note of the issues which have been raised in respect to the other 3 chapters, but we feel there is nothing which we need to comment with regard to those 3 chapters. We don't have anything much more fundamental. And the view which we'll do when we deal with our responses to the FFC recommendations is just for us to talk about more of the issues which in certain instances might assist in implementing some of the recommendations if we were to go with them. With regard to the chapter 1 of the review of provincial equitable share formula, we understand the matters which have been raised by the FFC. And what we are saying in response to that is that pending the outcome of the policy review process on provincial and local governments, there may be a need for us to reconsider the financing of provinces. So we are saying those are the processes, so the 2 things touch on one another. Regarding the public infrastructure investment, the department agrees with the FFC recommendations that there should be a significant increase of departmental baselines with regard to public infrastructure investment, in particular as it relates to provincial and special emphasis to rural development. We also support the FFC recommendation on the link to improve the quality of targeted outcome of infrastructure investment towards employment creation and poverty reduction. We also agree with the recommendation that government should implement a fully comprehensive national infrastructure maintenance strategy. In this regard, the department is reconfiguring itself to be in a position to better monitor and enforce accountability in municipalities and provinces with regard to credible budget, infrastructure maintenance, and improved monitoring on the outcomes of infrastructure investment. With regard to Chapter 6, that is the management and financing of road infrastructure, we will respond on two issues, so that is on the financing and on the skills issues. Starting with the financing issues, the department recognizes that the road classification, for example, regarding access roads, district and provincial roads process, needs to be finalized by government. The finalization of the list classification will provide information on roads that need maintenance, rehabilitation, and the extent of backlog. The completion of the road classification will further assist in the issue of the responsibility that is powered and function for road maintenance, rehabilitation, and addressing the backlog. Currently, information on road maintenance backlogs at the local government here is unknown. The department notes that while the FFC proposes cost recovery for road investment, the FFC is not clear on how this will be achieved. More importantly, also the FFC, while it makes recommendations regarding the two following issues, we believe that the issues have not been taken to their logical conclusion in order for us to assist as to whether this can be implementable or not. That is in relation to explicitly including a road infrastructure component within the provincial and local government equitable share formula and the introduction of a separate conditional grant specifically targeted at building technical capacity within the road management sector of provincial and local government. And as I have already said, we think it is a little bit difficult for us to say at this stage whether with regard to these two, although in theory we agree with the approach, but in order for us to see whether this can be implemented or not, only if the actual design matters as to how the things will be implementable, then we can make a decision. And just to illustrate the point, some 2 years ago as a department, we started looking at the issue of how to deal with the issue of the funding of roads through the equitable share, which will assist with the maintenance. And while doing that work, we ran into issues regarding data which can be used. For example, when you talk about roads, you can make a distinction in terms of paved, gravel, and hard roads, and also the issues of data around the stocks of those roads. Whether you make your cutoff point as 1994 or whichever year, in order for us to come up with what we can call an annual cost for maintaining these roads, so which will be based on the stock. And in that regard, we couldn't. So all what we are saying is we agree. But rather than talking about these issues, what we need all of us, both the FFC and government, is to look at to how practical we can deal with this particular matter. Then on that basis, if the thing is there is something which is workable, we don't think there will be a problem for us to support that particular view. So that is what we are emphasizing. And probably we can also make a recommendation that probably what might assist, because this work has been done, recommendations have been made. So we are also sure, based on the research of the FFC, their program, whether it is not possible, rather than to allow the two issues hanging, whether in this current financial year they cannot continue working on the things, probably in the next year they can make actual recommendations as to how the things can be implementable. Because like we said, in theory everybody agrees. And there is a lot of literature which has been written, everybody knows about the challenges which we need. So I don't think there is anybody who can agree with the approach. But it's actually how do we get the things done. So that is what we'd like to recommend, that the FFC takes this work step and make actual recommendations on these two issues, which probably it can recommend for next year. On the issue of the skills, the department supports the FFC recommendation on the need to address the lack of technical skills in road management, especially for the local government here. However, there is also a need to recognize that other critical local government functions, such as water, sanitation, electricity, property valuation, lack technical skills which impact on the ability of municipalities to properly manage and discharge their functions. And in this regard, we recommend that the lack of technical skills in local government be addressed comprehensively across all critical municipal functions. So we agree with the issue of roads, but we are saying rather than us limiting ourselves to roads, let us deal with all these issues. For example, if you look at the functions which we have already mentioned, water, sanitation and electricity. There are issues, for example, around the engineering services and the technological and technical expertise in those particular fields which ought to be dealt with comprehensively. And once we deal with the things comprehensively, it might, for example, necessitate us funding the things through conditional grants or through the review of the equitable share formula in order for us to deal with these issues comprehensively.
Chairman, I'm sorry to interrupt you, sir, but we actually got hot air being pumped into this room as we speak. It's now blowing onto me from somewhere under my chair here rather than cool air. This is becoming really very uncomfortable. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If something could please be done about it.
I'm not a technical person, so let the officials deal with that.
Mr. Chairman, I am not suggesting that the speaker was talking about that. If this is coming from
okay.
The department agrees with the FFC recommendation on the review of the pre-basic water and sanitation subsidy. It is recommended that the commission makes concrete recommendations on content matters around the coherent oversight framework that will assist water service authorities to manage trade-offs in the design and determination of their water tariffs. Again, like we said in the beginning, we agree in theory with what is being recommended, but we are saying let us get into the nitty-gritty because it's the nitty-gritty which will tell us to what extent the things are doable. So that is the point which we come from. Secondly, the department agrees with the commission's recommendation on the establishment of an independent national water regulator, subject to the actual cost of the proposal and affordability, therefore being known upfront, and any lessons learned from the regulation of both bulk and retail electricity by the national energy regulator of South Africa being taken into account. So we are saying when this concept is done, let us be cognizant that there is something already. So let us look as to how it is functioning both from the bulk and the retail part of it in order for us to improve on this particular recommendation. The Department of Water Affairs and Environment needs to continue focusing more on the support of local government with regard to water services and resources. So all what we are saying is our reasons for being in agreement with that review. If you look at the state of local government in relation to water and sanitation, it is quite clear for all of us that there are significant challenges which ought to be addressed. And we think if they can do that disjuncture between the regulatory function and the support function with the Department of Water Affairs and Environment, focusing more on the support role, most of the problem we are sitting with, we can be regard to universal access, the department has proposed to the National Treasury that the funding for rural water and sanitation infrastructure be determined through the earmarking of a specific allocation from the municipal infrastructure grant. This is meant as accelerating the universal access in rural communities, mostly in communal lands. In essence, what we are saying is that rural water and sanitation and rural municipalities need to be prioritized differently, but still within the umbrella of the municipal infrastructure grant. Because in respect of rural municipalities, we are talking of human settlements that have been in existence for a number of years, if not ages. But there has never been significant movement in terms of getting the necessary infrastructure which will give these communities access to the city. So if you were to compare the issue of rural municipalities vis-a-vis urban-based municipalities, in the context of your urban municipalities, we are talking more about what you can call expansion or growth points. But we are not talking about existing settlements which have been there about 20 years ago. In terms of access, that is there. It's only the expansion which comes from the population migration from the rural areas to the urban areas. And we are taking this view because we think whereas it is necessary for us as a nation to deal with the issues which our urban municipalities, our cities confront, we should not in the process forget the rural part of the country, so there should not be a marginalization of rural communities. So access to the land is ought to be made available. So that is the reason we made that recommendation to the National Treasury through the media MITEC process. But those are the issues which we'll continue dealing with amongst ourselves as government. Now, in terms of the assessment of the institutional and fiscal capacity support mechanisms of local government, we got the following to say. The department agrees with the commission's recommendation that local government should be central to the setting of the agenda for capacity building program. With regard to the proposal that government must establish an intergovernmental wide framework, we are of the view that the current national capacity building framework serves this purpose and can be strengthened or refined to address any deficiencies if there are some which we become aware of. Further, the department supports the commission's recommendation that each capacity building program must have a clear outline of measurable objectives, targets, and timelines, including the conditions of withdrawal from a specific municipality in respect of certain aspects of the support program, while that support program will continue to be in place in respect of other municipalities, or even in respect of that particular municipality in regard to some of the aspects of that program. The department agrees with the recommendation that a variety of grant infrastructure instruments should be used to address different capacity challenges within different functional areas. But we propose that government should strengthen the framework within which the Development Bank of Southern Africa should implement the Sierra Mandate program by way of ensuring that measurable objectives, targets, timelines, interface with other sector players and municipalities happen. So in short, all what we are saying is that most of the things the commission is proposing we agree with. But we are saying let us see what the nitty-gritty is in order to take the things forward. And so that in that regard, we believe that the commission is better pleased in terms of research capacity in other areas, that whereas the rest of us in government we deal with a number of things then we can take things forward. So that concrete recommendations are made as part of its work in order for us to be able to see how we can implement this thing. But it's only when that work is done that we can concretely say all of us whether we agree or not. And it might be said that sometimes the government, some of the previous recommendations, we may not have taken them in terms of implementation, but the fact is in order to do some of the things, you need the actual things to be put in place. So that is what we are proposing in terms of how some of this work might need to be taken place. But it's not within our rights to do, but we are just sharing some of our thoughts about how to move with some of this work which is
sitting or out today. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Manika. All the members, there's time for questions. One round. You can start. Please put up your hand. Let me just make the release. You may start.
Thank you, Chairman. Chairman, just one question. The department seems to generally accept the recommendations of the Commission, but it seems to be hesitant about implementing and until a kind of big picture is made. And I would like to just illustrate this with the old thing about how do you eat an elephant a little bit at a time. And I'm wondering why, you know, if the recommendations are good, they can't be implemented piecemeal. Why do we have to wait for a great deal more research and so on to be done? Some aspects may well require more research, but the ones that you're happy with, why not just implement?
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. I'm looking at slide number 7 on road infrastructure, where the department says that FFC is silent on the actual design. And bullet number 2 speaks about a separate conditional grant specifically targeted at building technical capacity. I wonder if this should be separate from existing education institutions where you could get a proper training in order to achieve whatever skills, because those will be long-term. Bearing in mind that within the budget, there's in every department, there's a certain percentage that covers capacity building. How do you separate the covering of this capacity building and the actual training of road management where you think you should need a separate conditional grant? If you can just clarify that one. Thank you.
I just want to find out from probably all departments that how do they coordinate these response, FFC recommendations and response, because we have Department of Health commenting on road and transport, as well as local government commenting on health. Then how do they plan and coordinate all these things? Might find first each department might be contrary to the other. And when it comes to implementation, how do they coordinate their activities? And what value do these things add to their service delivery in general?
The agreement that the department has on targeted grants. But one needs clarity from the department on two issues. So the IDP process, how authoritative is that in relation to other state organs? And also to check with the current MIG grant that has been given, what sort of performance are we experiencing? Because I think all of us in the past couple of years, we have agreed that the local government is our place of delivery, and the more resources were made available at that level. But now the complaint I think that we received from Ford was that the IDP process, of course, sometimes it actually undermines some of the deliverables in that local communities currently on the MIG grant that we have at the Dawah Hispani. And also just as a small clarity, whether it is the responsibility of the FSC to actually deal with the nitty-gritty on behalf of the department. My understanding was that it was to advise on a policy direction, you know. But what I'm hearing is that you're saying, yes, we agree with you, but tell us how we do it. And I'm not understanding correctly. Whether it is what Honorable Lisa at the back has indicated that you are reluctant to implement. That's what I'm concerned. Just the Jews from that kind of statement. Thank you.
Although lobby.
Thank you, Chairman. Chairman, I'd like to agree with some of the other honourable members here. I think the deterioration in the road network in our rural area has reached alarming proportions. And I'd also say something else about the sanitation and water. That's the other two variables which are extremely important. And I think the sooner we address those variables, Mr. Chairman, the better. Because especially in rural areas, we find that the road infrastructure is a vital link in the economic progress of those particular areas. And I must say, Chairman, I've travelled fairly extensively in the constitution period. And some of the rural roads are just about impossible these days. So I'd like to agree, and I say we must put special emphasis on road structures, especially the improvement of that. And I think that the fact that the skills is lacking in some of these local municipalities, we have to address that, Chairman, it's reached an untenable situation. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Chair. I have been listening to the agreement from the department agreeing to the recommendation of the FFC throughout. And I don't see any where they do not disagree with the FFC. Now, I was expecting to hear from especially Department of Corporate Governance as to what have they done in response to the promise given by the President of the creation of 500,000 jobs by the end of this year. I thought maybe as the department at that level, it would come out with a plan which would actually indicate as to what have they planned to also play a leading role in the creation of 500,000 jobs by the end of the year. I would very much like to hear something with regard to that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Koro. To the department on page 6 at the bottom, the last bullet is food. The department tells us it's reconfiguring itself to be in a position to better monitor and enforce accountability in municipalities and provinces with regard to creditable budgets, etc. What is your monitoring system at present, and what are you going to do to better it in terms of practicality? Because we sometimes get departments sitting in Cape Town and Pretoria, but we don't see them at the grassroots level in the communities. Thank you, members, for your round of questions. Honorable Scorni.
Thank you, Chairperson. Fundman and Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs. Thank you, Chair. You know, colleagues were raising this question about these agreements that the department has enlisted there. You know, we're agreeing with this, but we want the FFC to do this, to agree with this, we want FFC to do this. Now, I took out my constitution now because I wanted to see, to understand what is the responsibility of FFC, what is the responsibility of the department. Because the responsibility of the FFC, with my limited understanding, is that it will recommend. Now, you're supposed to be saying to us, this is what they are doing. This is what you are doing as a department. And perhaps this is where your limitations are. You're not saying that. You're saying, FFC, you're agreeing with this, with what you're saying, but go and work out other things. I'm expecting you as a department, the responsibility lies with you. It does not lie with FFC. FFC has done its role to make those recommendations. But what you are not telling us as well is that, how are you engaging with FFC? We raised the question, if members remember, we raised the question yesterday with FFC. If the departments are taking interest in their recommendations, FFC says some of the departments, though their direct engagement is normally with Treasury. But we did not get the impression that their departments will really take serious interest to engage FFC. And we would like to you, perhaps, to be doing that more and more. So that the recommendations should go further than just what FFC to be doing there. But, clearly. But Chair, you know, your committee, the Committee on Finance, and especially with our committee on standing committee on appropriations, it would like the people who are responsible, the accounting officers. I think in terms of the Public Finance Management Act, there are accounting officers. Not everyone is an accounting officer in the department. If therefore the accounting officer is not there, I think that we're supposed to get an apology. Why is the accounting officer not able to come? Because we're not all of us is going to account if things don't go haywire. But now, without getting apology also, so that the committees must accept that, well, if the accounting officer is not here, we can carry on. Because we have a choice. Not to allow you to, as you call it, to talk to us, say, okay, go. The day then the accounting officer is willing to come to us, then it's only then that we'll be able to talk to you. But you're not telling us why is the accounting officer not here. We didn't give that apology. I do not know why. But, certainly, Chairperson, I think that the issue of roads, my colleague, the Honorable Mnguni, raised the issue of coordination. You're talking about roads, somebody must classify. You know, I really don't understand how you're functioning, you know. If the department, government must classify the roads. Who is this government that we're talking to? I just wonder if we were to go to the public, then talk to the public, and the public here are saying, no, the department, the government must do this. What do the public say? Just tell me. We government. We're going to the people and say, no, government must do this. Government must do this. But who is this government that we're talking to? Because every year, it is not the first time that you're coming talking about this issue of road classification. There are no time frames. They are just put there. Somebody must do road classification. You're not telling us that last year you proposed this thing, this is what happened, this is where the delay is, this is where parents would like these members to intervene. You're not telling us that. You're saying, no, this somebody must intervene. What you would like to hear is concrete, what you call the suggestions, concrete things that are not happening. Where do you want us to unlock your, if there are blockages? Where do we unlock? That's what we'd like to hear. Not general things, please. The other issue that you're raising is the that line that talks about other challenges that you're having. What line is that I'm telling now? But you raise issues of water, issues of what? I mean, you raise important issues, issues of infrastructure. Current department, yes. But, you know, actually, it goes back to what Honorable Mnguni is talking about, this coordination. What is your responsibility? What is your role as a Department of Cooperative Government? We have what is called the Department of Water and Environmental Affairs. Now, you're not making that distinction. So you're what you call your recommendation. It is very what you call it, because it is not what you call it, making this distinction. Because we would like you to make a distinction that clarifies really that a certain department is responsible for resources, a certain department is responsible for implementation, so that when we talk to water affairs, we understand the distinction between these two. You're not making that distinction. So you're not making our work easy in that fashion. But as well, I mean, this issue of coordination, you're not telling us that you're talking to water affairs are not cooperating with you when you do this. You're not telling those things. You speak as if it's your responsibility. It's not your responsibility. You have got your own mandate. They've got another mandate. We want that distinction to be clear, so that where you are responsible, you tell us what are your own challenges in your own area of responsibility. The issues of challenges, the chair, that are raised here. My understanding is that what they were saying, what FSD is. The FSC is of the view that the Department of Cooperative Governance, maybe with Treasury, I'm sure Treasury will still respond as well to that, with respect to issues of capacity building. They think that we are emphasizing on issues of financial management rather than broadening this capacity building across all the other areas where you have a responsibility with the other departments. I think that's what they are saying here. And I thought that you would be telling us that no, it is not the case on these issues. These are what you're doing or you intend doing. It's not very what you call it clear on those areas. So, maybe for now, I should rest my case. Thank you.
Honorable.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, on page 6, the first bullet, I take note that the department agrees with the FFC's recommendation, but I would like to understand, what is the department's understanding of rural development? It states here that there should be baselines with regard to public infrastructure investment, in particular provincial and municipal, with special emphasis to rural development. Now, I would like to understand what is the department's take on the rural development. Apart from providing adequate roads and adequate normal local government facilities, what else, in their view, would constitute rural development? Thank you, Chair.
Now, Chair, I would like to protect the department. I'm fair. I want to be fair. The question was raised by my colleague, Honorable. You're not telling us about what you're doing, we're going to do to create these 500,000 jobs. You might be ready with that, they might be ready, but my understanding is that we invited them to respond to FFC, what you call a recommendation. think I don't want to be unfair to them. Mm-hmm. But if they are ready with your response, it's fine. Thank you.
Some of the responses can also be put in writing to the committee because we've got the time constraint. I made the ruling when we started the meeting there will be one round of questions. I see Honorable Mokoro's hand is up. You can write your questions for me. Can you, who's going to lead the responses? I noted you, Honorable Mokoro.
Yeah, I'm sorry to tell you. I was going to protest but myself, I don't know whether I'm allowed to, you know, to align myself with Honorable Shogoni. I was going to protect the department. Maybe we all don't see what we see from this department. All of us. There's a pattern. And I think we must deal with those patterns. We must deal with the approach of this various department. I think Honorable Shogoni put it very well. I would add and say, in the absence of substance in their report now, let's give them a chance to go and prepare a better report that we can question, that can provoke us into a discussion with them. And that would be in a way of protecting them. Now we got really, we will just be wasting our time in questioning this report because it is just agreement, but there's nothing that we can say. Okay, you are planning to do this, but what do you think this plan is going to end up being? What? Such things. So that is my, I'm not actually getting into the second round of questions. I'm just protesting the department. Give them time, Chair, to go and sit down and prepare a report that will have substance that we can actually participate in it. Thank you.
Honorable Sulu?
I second the proposal of our member here about that. Even the head of department is not present. I think it's absolute second my colleague about that.
Yesterday we had the same situation where the DG of the department didn't turn up and committee took a very strong position on that issue. And we agreed that we will send a letter to the Director General of that specific department. The same will happen here. So that's the first question I asked when I entered the room this afternoon. Where is the DG? And the apologies have to be in a written format. That was not done. And when the DG delegates its authority or powers, it must also be in a written format in terms of the PMMA. So please take note of that. Committees must, DGs and departments must take the committees serious. We're busy with serious business. We're not playing games. And that message you must take back to your director general. Because there was no excuse, no apology or information. If it was sent, it didn't turn up at this institution. That's enough on that one. Can you please go on with your responses? If there's issues that you can't respond to now, there might be, then you do it in a written format. We give you 30 days to do that.
No, sir, I think that we must help for the sake of procedure. Maybe we need to deal with the proposal by the colleagues. I think they've made a proposal. If we want to say that the department must continue, I think that we have to appeal to the committee that we have allowed them to present and perhaps they must continue, but in future it will not be allowed. I think that you're quite right that we must get an apology. It must be written. You must, be, as a chairperson, be informed before the meeting starts as to that in writing that it's not going to be there. Because I know the department, they know.
And if as parliament now, this term is starting now, if we don't put our foot down, they will never respect us. If we don't respect ourselves, this department will never respect us. I think that we must put the record straight from the beginning. But I do accept that we can what we call a bend backwards today and say to the department, next time it's not going to be acceptable. Next week it's going to be a quarterly report. So it's a continuation of the process. So I think that we need to be very clear that this is another term. I mean, it cannot be business as usual. Even here in Parliament, they say it can't be business as usual. But if the chairperson is requesting the committee to allow the department to continue, maybe we should appeal to colleagues, but let's allow them to continue. But I think that what the colleagues are saying is fair. You know, that's common.
Thanks, Chairperson. Seated here, Chairperson, I really fully support the concerns that have been raised at the back and the proposal. And I would know, and I think that I thought that the Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs is a new department. I don't know what has happened in its chemistry of establishment, whether there have been some serious changes from the former or the predecessor department, I'm not sure. One would then suggest that we allow them to respond on what they think they can respond and finish, and go back. And then I hope that they have picked up exactly what our concerns are, and seriously so. And if one can see that we give them an opportunity just simply to respond to what they can respond on as a new department, that probably that we don't have the DG on the head. Maybe there is still confusion in the department who heads the department. And let's give them the benefit of the doubt and then make sure that the message goes back and they brief us on what they think they can do. Thanks, Chairperson. But that doesn't undermine what has been raised at the back. It is genuine and it is correct. And that is the general position that we have to be respected and to be addressed by people that have got authority, that any suggestion that is made, you must be sure that if agreed, it is going to find expression. Unlike if we agree, somebody is still going to lobby the DG somewhere else, and the woman may not know what the response is going to be. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mashire. Thank you to the honorable members who expressed yourself clearly on that. The department take note of that. You can proceed with your response. I saw the hands. You will organize yourself if you can.
No, thank you.
The one who knows the most.
Sir, thank you so much. I think we also like to indicate that we've actually taken note of this, and I think it has been we were meant to really have apologized, though it was not going to be in writing, because yesterday and on the 5th and the 6th, we were also appearing before the Portfolio Committee on Cooperative Governance. So it was transcending into today up until 5, that was the set time, though I think they might have finished now. So I think it is something else that we really omitted to apologize. So the KNDG was supposed to be here. And unfortunately, I'm sure they overran in terms of their meeting. So, but we've taken note of the fact that we need to be making this in writing even in future. And I did communicate with Zolani about the kind of pledge that is happening, but we thought they will finish earlier and then come over to this. But again, in terms of the approach to the FFC report, I think truly there's something that we have not really because we thought in terms of looking at the processes that we've been following, that we respond to this without really going into maybe beginning to say this is what the department is doing. I think that's what is basically missing from our contribution in that regard. But certainly the issue around the engagement with FSC, what normally happens is that obviously they will table, as they are accountable to yourself, they will table the report, and once the report is tabled to yourself, we are able thereafter to then follow up on a number of issues. I think the impression that might have been created is that we are saying they need to really detail down, because a lot of work has been is in progress. The only thing is also to understand, to say, based on their research, what are the other things that we need to really begin to look at. But I think what I'm trying to say is that it is always our normal practice that once they have tabled the report, we are able to then follow up on this particular kind of issues that we are raising now. But I would also give my colleagues also an opportunity to engage with what we can engage in terms of the report. But basically, we're still going to engage with some of the proposals to try and make it maybe deepen down in terms of our response around FFC's recommendations. But we apologize for having created an impression that we're saying they are the ones. We understand their role very well to say they make a recommendation. We have to then begin to unpack on the recommendation and say what could really be done. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Just want also to try to deal with some of the issues that the members have raised with regard to the presentation that was made. Actually, one of the reasons why the presentation is trying to, like, shifting the accountability is because some of the issues the department is currently working on. That we raised. Now, when the FSC says there must be the infrastructure maintenance strategy, now, from where we see it, we don't think it's a matter of only the strategy, but we need to fix the municipal budget, because when you budget, you must also budget enough for maintenance of the infrastructure that you create. So those are the issues that we are working on. And that's why we are saying we are trying to put ourselves together so that we can have teams that are meant for made up of a number of departments, because the departments also are very important in terms of the infrastructure development, like sector leaders, DWAF, DME, transport, and them. So we are trying to come up with this team that will then try to deal with these issues, and then after that, I think we'll deal with the measures that the FSC has raised. Now, there is this issue that is coming always in terms of the prioritization of sports projects and the complaint that municipalities are not prioritizing sports projects. Now, this is the matter that is a serious challenge, and this is where now the department, also in terms of the new mandate of the department, we need to put emphasis that departments must attend ICP processes in municipalities. Because there's no way that there will be a sports project in a particular municipal ICP if the Department of Sports doesn't participate in that process to help the municipality, to help the community, to help the sports project in their ICPs. Now, municipalities are complaining that sports department is not coming to their ICP process. And as a department, this is now one area that we are going to make sure that through this team arrangement, in fact, actually we are planning to have 52 forums in terms of trying to come up with this plan, so that local space, which is the district, is able to accommodate all the departments, and the IDP is reflective of all the sectors. But we appeal to sector departments, and we are doing this for that when the municipality runs their IDP process, we need to then be able to participate. And that's why now municipalities, when they spend me, they will only spend me on projects that are in their IDP. You can't spend money on projects that is outside the IDP. Now, then the department must come and make sure that all their sector needs are also captured in the IDPs of municipalities. Now, to say the MIG money then must be separated from me, that will then be encouraging the department not to participate in the IDPs of municipalities. And then that's where you have municipalities, departments parachuting projects in municipalities, which is not the right way of doing it. The right way is to get the project in the IDP, and then the municipalities will then
implement that project. With regard to rural water and sanitation, what we are trying to say, because FFC says the budget for infrastructure must be substantially increased. We agree ourselves. We said that's what we need to do. But we then also said, we said to Treasury, we mustn't just increase this money and then put this money in the formula. We have the rural part, we have the urban part. Now, in the rural municipalities, you have villages and villages where there's no access to water, there's no infrastructure. To put a bulk pipeline from Nandoni Dam in Puerto to Matop, it's about 250 km. Now, to put that bulk pipeline, it can cost about 700 million. Now, the district like Capricorn cannot have this money. Then how do we deal with this thing? Then we are saying, what we said to Treasury, we said, we must have a separate allocation within MIG, the same way we did with the Bakere allocation, where we will then target that money to that rural community so that we can have that sanitation. And I think by doing that, we will be able to speed up the development with regard to that. In terms of the monitoring systems, of course, we are also working with this thing because we are saying, we started already, we were in Mopane last week. We spent the whole day in Mopane trying to understand these issues. Now we realize that we need the monitoring team that will be able to monitor budget implementation, budgeting, so that the budget are credible. And when you have a credible budget, you also implement that budget. Because at the moment, the municipalities have a good budget, but what they are implementing is something else which is totally different. So those are the things that we are trying to put together in terms of our new mandate for getting everybody around service delivery. Thank you, Chair.
Probably just to be very brief, the colleagues have responded to how some of these things came across. There was these questions which were asked about conditional grants regarding skills and all those things. All what we are saying, like I said in the when I was talking for the presentation, is some of the things like funding the maintenance of roads through the local government equitable share. I already said close to about 2 years ago we started looking at this particular issue. So in response to the thing is we are saying that there is something we have done, and hence we said we agree with some of the things. But some of the things which some of the things have not worked, like I have said, you run into issues around you. Without all your variables on the data which you need to use so that you have something which is not questionable. And those are the things which we need to still work on. And it's only when all the things are here that we'll be in a better position to say how we implement this particular. But we were talking from that context that some of this work, for example, looking at the issue of skills. As a department at the moment, we are looking at some of those things. How better do we deal with the issue of skills? And how probably they need to be funded. And it talks to the issue which was raised about coordination. Because while when we get those proposals here, then we have to engage with the affected government departments, including the National Treasury, as to our proposals, whether they make sense, the proposals which they have themselves make sense to come to that particular position. So that is what we are talking about. And hence we said we support, we agree with things conceptually. But this is the work which we are doing. And it answers even the issue of coordination, because you asked the issue of coordination. Some departments were here. They said this and this. Because as long as a committee you call us individual by one particular department, then you are likely to get individual department positions. But whereas we'll come here and say, as a department, this is what we think. Another department will say something. But as we continue to engage on our proposals, there may be synergy or when we move in a particular direction and deeper, and those are the things which will be sorted out in as we do the actual work. Thank you.
The issues raised by the colleagues, what's happening currently, and we have developed a draft document in response to some number of issues around the management of grants and infrastructure, the roads and budgeting issues. That report, the Minister has promised that we will present that report here so that to begin to raise issues, to sort of begin to support the idea of coordination that you have raised, the issue of infrastructure management and budgeting. That report will come and present here.
just to make another contribution, Chairperson, around the issue of the emphasis on financial management, particularly especially around the insurance capacity building. Like as indicated from the beginning, there's quite a lot of coordination we're making around that. And looking at the five KPIs that exist for local government, for infrastructure and basic services, what the department has done and is continuing to do in partnership with the institutes like the South African Civil Association of Civil Engineers, the DBSA, what we're doing is having to deploy technical experts and expertise, obviously within the municipalities, to then deal with issues that relate to capacity. Because one of the key issues is not only about the training, it's the question of who are we going to train if that person doesn't exist. Or if there is no person in there. When we look at the organograms of the municipalities, especially the technical services, there is quite huge vacancies that exist out there. On the other side, then you hear that we can attract the skills that are necessary to really be attracted to the municipality. So what we're saying is that we're dealing with two dimensions. Is the issue around the human capacity. That's why in the issue around the things of mind, we said, if we deploy, let it just not be a technical expert. Let's also deploy a technical young professional to shadow that particular person as we're caring, so that the municipality must then decide to say whether we take that person after a period or what should then happen. But I think that is basically what we're doing. Around financial management, again, much of the focus is looking at that, looking at the audits, negative audits that are happening. We also have quite a number of agreements with the Association of Accounting Technicians. So the problem sometimes is not necessarily when you look at the triangle, the CFO. It's basically under the CFO, the technical, the staff that deals with this finances on a daily basis that are not necessarily equipped. Some of them, as we're trying to do, and Treasury is busy with the budget and Treasury, the assessing budget and Treasury capacity. We're starting to realize that some municipalities are run by just one person with one degree, because the rest of these people are particularly having either metric or other related qualifications. So we're saying that is the area that we're focusing on, and there's currently training happening in KZN, Limpopo, and Gauteng. Again, good governance, we are having what participation system and in terms of training. So I'm saying it's some of those things that we're doing around capacity building. But we agree with the president to say all of these particular programs have to have very clear strategic objectives and the outcomes so that we are able to measure them and say this is what happened. And I think that's the context why we're agreeing with them to say we have a national capacity building framework which all these departments and other related capacity building institutions are part. So they are actually engaging with us in that respect. The issue around how authoritative is the IGPs, and which is a correct issue that has been raised, is to say annually we do IGP reviews, and we expect municipalities to then, and we're supporting them throughout, it becomes an intensive process. And we invite also these departments to come and be part of the IGP reviews. And obviously making sure that in the process the IDPs are sticking to the budget at the end of the day. But obviously there are challenges there. Obviously sometimes you find that as the municipality continues to implement this IDP, the revenue goes down because of the economic meltdown or number of factors or the under collection. So they are unable to then begin to meet some of this particular kind of needs, which is an area that Mr. Blogger has indicated to say we're focusing more also on budget to assist them. So I think in relation to that issue of IDP, it's a legitimate issue and we'll continue to wrestle with it to say, departments, let's try and see what we can then do in terms of, you know, adding credibility to this process. So yeah, I think basically that's the kind of issue around the IDP process.
Okay, I just want to deal with some three issues that I've omitted. The other one is the issue of the roads classification issue. Now, I think this was in response to the FFC recommendation about the funding for road infrastructure and also maintenance. Now, the current challenge that we have is that, you can only budget for the asset that is in your book. So, at the moment, the municipalities are currently prioritizing streets. But when you talk access roads, when you talk district roads, there seems not to be a clear indication of who owns this infrastructure. Now, that's what we then said. The Department of Transport must finalize the road classification. Now, they started working on this thing some time. And until such time, that classification is finalized to say this road belongs to the district. This road,
saying to telling us that you're not very sure which roads belong to who. That's what you're telling us. But you're saying it's not a new problem. You're saying it's an old problem. And so your explanation does not help us. What we want you to say is that when are you going to finalize this problem? Because as a department, you have a responsibility. As much as the Department of Transport has got a responsibility, the provinces has got a responsibility, you have a responsibility to come together to coordinate these people, and whether it's through transport to say, but look, this problem cannot be, we can't come here every day and sing the same song. Now we must finalize this thing, we must finalize this thing. Who must do it? Somebody must coordinate it. I think there should be time. What we are saying that there should be time frame that now, and that's the recommendation that we're going to make as this committee, that when you come back next time, maybe we might have to invite all of you, those who are responsible for what you call it for roads. We might have to assist you then if you can't coordinate yourself. We might have to coordinate you and say, look, all of you come here. Sandra, come here. When was this job done? When is it intended to finish? So that we don't have to, complaining about what you're saying. Even the Department of Transport itself, which is supposed to be the custodian of these roads. Yesterday, only yesterday, they were telling us, they were raising the issue that you're raising of this unclassified road. That is why we are saying now, if we are crying, government is crying, no, what should the people, ordinary people, the voters do now? Because government is saying now somebody must do it, somebody must do it. Everybody is saying somebody must do it. But nobody is taking the responsibility. That's all that we are saying as a committee or as committee, that you must take that responsibility. It must be clear. There must also be time frame. Because it's going to help your local government to be very clear of where is their roads, the provincial department and the national department. If we have to reconfigure the whole way of managing and maintaining this road, so that let it be so. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Kikoni. The President said in the State of the Nation address we must do things differently. The sooner we start, the better. And that goes for departments as well. 1 o'clock, the President addressed the National Press Council in Pretoria. I was fortunate to see it. He reiterated what he said in the State of the Nation address. There's a piece of legislation called the Intergovernmental Relations Act. It seems to me it's legislation on paper. And the Parliament will have to see. You can't do it yourself. We will direct you how to implement it. Because yesterday we also heard the lack of communication between departments. That is why you must take us serious when we speak about this. Are there any responses you want to add? Yes, please proceed.
Yeah. What I wanted to propose with regard to road classification, I want to propose that we will come back and present to the committee. Because we currently, it's part of the agenda for our infrastructure task team, which is coordinating all the other departments. So we'll then come back and give the committee in terms of how far we are with the Department of Transport. Because this is the matter that we're prioritizing it. Now, there was a question around the mixed performance. Mixed performance over the years has been challenging, but in the last 2-3 years, there was a lot of improvement. As we're talking now, I think next week, during the quarterly performance, we'll be able to give the details. It's spending almost 100%. But now, what we are doing from where we sit, we are saying we must now only concentrating on expenditure in terms of money, but we must look at the quality of that spending. We are currently now getting into MOU with the SIU, the Special Investigation Unit, that will then monitor this thing on a regular basis so that the quality of the money that we are spending, we are able to realize it. I think the issue of the 500,000 jobs through MIG, MIG is currently being implemented also through the labor intensive, but I think the Department of Public Works will give more on that part of the 500,000 jobs.
Anyone else from the department? Honourable members? Honourable Mishiria?
Chairman, I don't entirely need them to respond, but on that performance on the meet, is that a few months back, I think we are clear that there was about 500 million that was not spent on MIG, some few months back. Now, I've just asked that particular question so that they can try and relate it to what they are agreeing with FSC on the increase of the resources on infrastructure. What do they know what that means? If the current resources they can't spend, so that they get a correct picture. They should not just go out and just agree, must increase, whereas on the one side, you can't spend the money. We must say they must increase, but must have a plan to increase the spending. And then, I tell the sense the park cost is that a local municipality cannot employ an engineer, but then it acquires services of a consulting firm. And then an engineer that was supposed to come to my department then comes under the care of a consulting firm. Now, I just actually wanted them to go and relook at that particular thing. What is the actual problem? Because I'm the engineer, I can't dig up a post in a local municipality as an engineer. But employ my company can deploy into the municipality, and I can work for it as many years as possible. What's the difference? The Department of Local Government then must go and look deep in that particular matter. Thank you, Chairman.
Can you respond, or do you want to go back? Colin? You want to come back? Right, seems to me. Honourable members, are you covered? I think we've exhausted our time on the department. We thank them for coming, but take the message back to you directly, General, that we're waiting for his apology. This is the last time that we will meet with the department without the DG. Thank you. Well, they are now all smiling. Chairman, that is correct. That is public work.
I just want to tell you, are you ready?
All the way. Not really. Now, while we were busy here, I received this document. So we haven't read it. We've seen it now for the first time. That is also another serious point. We haven't received this in advance. And the ruling is at least 7 days before the meeting that the department submit the presentation to the committee members. It was handed out while we were busy with that department.
Chairperson, can I make a comment? Am I allowed?
Yes.
In terms of the document,
yes.
I can confirm that we have sent this document on the 3rd of this month 2009 to the committee with the subsequent plan. The only thing that might have changed is the overview portion, but the substantive document is and was sent quite well in advance. Thank you.
Then the committee section will have to explain it to us. We can receive in advance.
Gandhi.
Who will be leading the presentation? Is the Director General here?
The Director General is here in terms of Article 36 of the PFMA, with full authority. I am here.
You are here?
Correct.
We didn't receive any apology from your Director
General. There's no apology.
Why?
I am.
Well, you're the Director.
Correct.
Thank you. Well, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
You put your example to the rest.
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
In fact, that's very serious. Thank you for being here. We appreciate that. Honourable members, do you have the document in front of you? Right? You can kick off.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to bring some degree of vibrancy. I bring greetings from the Minister of Public Works, Jeff Deutsch, as well as Deputy Minister.
Chairperson, I need someone to come in here for their slides, please.
Yes, please definitely come. Thank you. Chairperson, honorable members, colleagues from other departments, let me take this opportunity to introduce the intrapreneurial change in Department of Public Works. My name is Chaupe Solo Madedia. I'm the Chief Operating Officer, Acting Director General for the Department. I'm here also to confirm we're gender sensitive. Next to me, I have the Chief Financial Officer, Casey Mutisi. And from the presenting table there, I have Mr. Stanley Henderson, who's the Acting Deputy Director General responsible for EPWP. I also have Adam Tobini, who's our Chief Director, Intergovernmental Relations. And also have Makito Mutumi, who's the Director in the Office of the Deputy Minister. So we are full house. And I also agree with Honorable Sokoni that we act and we say things here with full authority and can respond to any questions that the committee would like to raise with us. We believe and want to confirm, Chairperson, that we are the agenda of the broader government in terms of the question which I'm not going to be reiterating that you raised in terms of the 500,000 job opportunities which were announced by the President, that as the lead department in terms of the implementation of EPWP, we are on track. We are monitoring the situation on a day-to-day basis. We have a quarterly report that indicates that we've got our fingers on the pulse in terms of targets for December 2009. Stanley, in the detailed presentation, just to give you some level of comfort, we'll cut to our target of 550, and that will come just after doing the total overview. But for such a Chairperson, it's very important for me to highlight that we've taken note and appreciate the comments from the FFC with regard to the expanded public program, and also agree and take cognizance that program is a flexible program of government in terms of short-term job opportunity creation. We also confirm that with implementation of the municipal infrastructure grant, we ensure through DBSA that we, in the program of the Zamaje, that projects of a capital or maintenance nature are being implemented through the PWP or labor intensive method. The Minister of Public Works, jointly with the Director General, are driving the department at the moment to ensure that we enter into a protocol agreement with provinces. That is with premiers and MECs and executive councils, so that we ensure that EPWP, labor intensive, cuts across all the functions of government and with that protocol with specific targets and with specific reporting dispensation. I've touched on the question of the 500,000 job opportunities that we are monitoring the situation on a day-to-day basis. We have also entered into the partnership with the Independent Development Trust, as well as the BSA, in terms of the incentive grant. We'll give you the details after the overview that I've given. You'll also realize that in the slides or the printout that you have, you have 500 job opportunities, and on the screen there you have 500,000. That situation has been corrected. It was just typographical. The Department of Public Works is also collaborating with the Presidency in terms of the Community Works Program. We have also accepted the notion that we need to do more with less and adopted the turnaround strategy in the Department of Public Works so that we can do much more better than we've ever done before. To give you a level of comfort, I'm going to ask my colleague, the Deputy Director General responsible for EPCLP, Mr. Stanley Henderson, just to give you an executive summation of the figures, the plans, the MTF allocation, province by province, as well as the process of disbursement, who will be paid what, at what stage, and what happens. Can I take that opportunity, Chairperson, to allow me to proceed? Mr. Henderson, you can proceed. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. With regard to the incentive scheme, we have made a presentation, obviously, earlier, but we thought that we should include this because there would be new members. And just some brief background with regard to the incentive scheme touched on the FFC's document, that it was an innovation in terms of EPWP to introduce an incentive scheme that basically works quite differently from the normal conditional grant. The incentive scheme is a performance-based scheme, which means it's currently applied in the infrastructure sector of the expanded public works program, as well as the non-state sector. And it is based on the performance of these particular partners participating in the sector. And we would be more than willing to go into the details for the incentive scheme, but the simplest explanation, perhaps it is best to explain it in the way that if a given department would be allocating a certain budget to a particular project, we are monitoring closely the number of work opportunities in terms of person days for work, and we convert that to full-time equivalents. And if the performance will be above a certain threshold, let's say the threshold is the creation of 100 full-time equivalents or FTEs, if the performance then is 150, the participating department would be qualifying to be paid for the 50 FTEs above the threshold, which means that it's on the basis of 11,500 full-time equivalents, 11,500 per FTE rather. We have secured over the MTF 4.1 billion rand for the incentive scheme, and this is for year one that amounts to 465 million rand. This is a brief breakdown of what I've captured. Now, talking about for year one, and you can see the total of 4.1 billion rand of the MTF year is indicated, and you can see that the majority of the incentive scheme in terms of the allocations, it's earmarked for municipalities and 1.3 million, almost 1.4 million for provinces, and then we have the other amount here for the non-state sector, as well as for the intermediary and other costs. I try to touch on the brief, what the incentive scheme is all about. In order to access the incentive scheme, though, implementing or participating bodies, such as provincial departments and municipalities, and in the case of the non-state sector, the faith-based or not-for-profit organizations, they have to adhere to certain principles in order to be able to access the incentive scheme, and they have to report, amongst others, on our MIS, so that we can properly verify, validate the data. We go through a rigorous process of auditing to ensure that correct payments will be made to these participating bodies. For the record, we have put up also the clear criteria that bodies have to adhere to in terms of eligibility, that agreements that need to be signed and our funds will be dispersed, and we do have a latest slide that talks to the disbursement of funds also. If you would allow me briefly to touch on certain points, perhaps I'd like to, on this particular slide, go into a little bit more detail. In terms of eligibility, let's say for province municipalities to become eligible, they must report to DPW and they must meet the minimum employment creation targets, as I said. In terms of the agreements they have to sign, they enter. We don't accept that implementing bodies will necessarily automatically deliver on the target. We enter into a formal agreement where it's very clear between public works and the implementing body what the target is, and but I can know which projects inform those targets to ensure that there's a very clear understanding how they will achieve the number of work opportunities as agreed. And we also give a very, we have published in the Division of Revenue Act very clear indicative allocations what participating bodies would be qualifying for. So it is very clear to them what needs to happen. In terms of the appropriation of funds, they should incorporate the incentive allocation into their budgeting and planning process by taking into account that payment by DPW will occur quarterly after employment has declared. That is the agreement, so they know after every quarter, and then we will update you what regard to what has happened in quarter one of this current financial year. This is just to explain this particular slide, Chair, to explain that in terms of the incentive, even though we have only 75% of the incentive can be paid out in the current financial year to provinces, and this is based on the fact that we pay out 30 days after closing of a quarter, which means for quarter four, the payment will only be made in the subsequent financial year. That's why we have put up there 75% of the payment made. These are the indicative allocations as published, and you can see, for instance, that KwaZulu-Natal potentially be able to access 84 million rand, and the other figures for the other provinces are indicated there also. Pardon me? We can engage in that way, that's the fact, the situation like that, sir, if you want me to. This slide is just trying to capture the responsibilities at the different levels. What public works is supposed to do in terms of incentive grants, the treasury at the provincial level and provincial departments. And our role in public works is to clearly to disburse funds through the provincial treasury. So the funding is sitting on public works vote, on our department's vote, and it is paid through national treasury, rather through the provincial treasuries to the departments, and treasury will actually disperse that, the provincial treasuries, and provincial departments will clear agreement in terms of, or be produced statements in terms of what they can access. If they are clearing certain things, they have to come back to us. That's why we have a yes, no option there. Municipalities, there's a similar process, but just to emphasize that we are built into the process, particular rural bias. I hope I won't be asked what rural development is. But they are both in secondary rural bias in terms of the municipalities that extend our footprint beyond only the major cities. And you will see that the criteria for the cities that command big budgets is much higher, the criteria to qualify, and for the rural municipalities would be much lower. So that to ensure that even some of the poorer rural municipalities will be able to access the incentive scheme, and not only the big metro. Currently, we have signed 68 municipalities, including six that are eligible rather for the incentive grant, and we will. And through that grant, currently we are covering 10 of the ISRDP nodes, and. We have just captured there the token incentive allocation for municipalities is currently 201.7 million rand, of which 147 will go to rural municipalities and 54 million to metro. And according to our report, at least 96 municipalities will be able to access the incentive grants for the current financial year. This is just to show the difference in terms of disbursement process between provinces and municipalities. In case of municipalities, the funds will flow directly from National Public Works to the municipalities. We thought it prudent that we should be reporting to you what the current
state. Honourable members who made a ruling when we started the meeting, all cell phones off or on silent. I want you to let me speak to the room today. Thank you.
This slide captures gives you a brief update what has happened after quarter one of the current financial year in terms of the incentive scheme. 8 of the 16 eligible provincial departments have signed their incentive agreements by the 1st of August. And 32 of the 68 municipalities have signed the incentive agreement. In terms of the provincial departments, only two, namely KwaZulu-Natal and Eastern Cape, submitted first quarter reports in time for pay. And only one, namely KwaZulu-Natal, qualified for payout or payment in terms of the incentive scheme. And KwaZulu-Natal to the tune of 19.3 million rand. The European incentive manual has been finalized and we communicate extensively to implicated bodies to ensure that they understand very clearly what their responsibility should be in terms of if you want to access the incentive scheme. And the first payment to municipalities scheduled for 30th of October, and this is due to the difference in financial years, of course. Municipalities have just kicked off, as you would know, on the 1st of July with their current, for the new financial year. In terms of this particular section of our presentation, we would like to just make a few brief comments that we will be follow up to made on the outstanding set of agreements to be signed to ensure that everybody is tied in through the agreements, or all of those who qualify. And public bodies will be continuously briefed on the European incentive grants so that even those who currently, we have, I think, members from SAGA here, but that even those currently falling outside will be drawn into the fold to enable them to access the incentive grant. And they will be continued support from our side to public bodies to report so they can access into the ground, because it is very clear from our figures that there's one of the major impediments you would see would be the ability to capture data on our MIS, and that and data is there, we are obviously in no position to verify it and to audit properly to see, to ensure that the incentive payouts can be made. So that's in terms of this portion of the presentation, Chair. I don't know if you would like me to stop there. I think there's a
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to also highlight and add that we also invite in the private sector to also have their portion of EPWP implementation in the construction and maintenance project. Another challenge we need to overcome so that the importance in terms of EPWP, private sector and government are two different issues. So we'd like to bring them on board. We are facilitating our relationship with the NGOs. We are also ensuring that the CBOs come on board. And lastly, we are also polishing, as one of our challenges, so that we can have an effective and efficient system, our management information system, so that whatever happens on the ground in terms of municipalities and provinces and regional departments can be recorded timely and then report the correct figure at a specific time. Our infrastructure is in place, we are running, we are open for questions.
Thank you to the department, honorable members. You can indicate who wants to ask questions.
Relying too much on the private sector and
own technical personnel into class, and they end up lose morale and jump out to the private sector. And also, Chairperson, what I just wanted to raise is in relation to, I think FFC has not raised anything, unless it maybe have not been too attentive, the issue of asset register, that the Department of Public Works, I think, has had problems for the past 10, 20 years or so, the asset register. One understands that this asset register, if it was in place and correct, it was going to assist in some of our provision of services like housing and the rest. There is a lot of land and whatever that cannot be accounted for. That cannot be transferred to local municipality because ownership is not known and no documentation. And in part, that this asset register is actually prohibiting certain delivery of services. And whether the department is actually taking cognizance of this problem of asset register, and what are they doing? When do they think they will get over and be on top of this particular matter, so that where they can assist municipalities with surplus land, then they can do so. And in terms of the creation of 500,000 jobs, and also the service delivery in terms of accommodation for some of the other government departments. We are seeing a lot of buildings around the country which are left unmaintained, rotten roofs, gutters, and some of them are green on top with algae growing on top of them. And when you follow it, you are told that it's a public works building. And then, what is it that they are doing? The FSCs, I may not blame FSC, maybe they may have raised it 2-3 years back when I was not part of this process. But to the department, I think it is still relevant because it remains a thing to be done. But, you know, you've got the housing Chairperson in the townships that belong to state. And some of those houses have been converted into mansions. Department of Public Works does not even know that that particular house, the original house, belongs to the department. And you know, it's those things are happening across, just disappear. And again, there are people that have been staying in those houses. They have been making numerous attempts to buy over those houses, but the department can't help them because they don't have records, and people are honest and say, I'm staying in a state house, then I want to relieve the department and buy the house, because the department is not in the business of renting houses to people. But because they are not organized, they don't have records, they can't conclude these transactions and transfer the ownership to the other people sitting on them. I think we just want to know whether they are doing anything in this particular matter. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. You have taken two of my questions, Honorable Mashire. But I will. About 500 jobs, I will read the statement here. We are also in the process of strengthening the we are in the process of the strengthening the process of achieving the 500,000 jobs. Is there anything tangible? Can we use what we use from theory to practical? What I want to the issue of incentive, the EPWP incentive background. Bullet one. Will you please come, just try to explain, you come out, because here is the departmental language. which is so difficult for the MP to understand. Just to clarify slightly. Right.
Thank you, Honorable Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. None of my questions have been taken up yet, so I'm afraid I have to speak. Mr. Chairman, I need to clarify, and perhaps I'm being stupid, but in terms of the quantification of eligible municipalities and provinces, I would have thought all of them were eligible, but we've been told that only some of them are eligible. So I presume there's some kind of work to be done, and they'll become eligible in the future, but I need clarity on that. And then in terms of the allocation of funds, I mean, yeah, I really do need to understand how this allocation was done. It's there's no number on the sheet I'm looking at, but it was the one that the chairman, the assistant chairman, the chairman in the pink shirt, made reference to in passing about Gauteng, you know, how that schedule was determined. Chairman, and unlike comrades, the Honourable Mashila, I won't go into a long story about King's House and the Sandware in Durban, which is for another meeting, I think, perhaps. But Comrade Mashila does raise some interesting points, I won't go down that route. So really, it's more about the eligibility and the allocation, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Little Porter, your hand was up, I noted you.
Yes, Chair. My question is, we have a National Department of Public Works. And then we have Provincial Department of Public Works. My question is, has the National Department have any responsibility over the Provincial Department? More so, especially with the projects that are taken over by the Department of the province. I'm saying this, Chair, there is a very sad situation that you see when you go to Kimberley, especially to the big hole where everybody from the world comes and, you know, to witness this big hole. Just behind it, there's a very enormous project that was going on there. Building a convention center. It's a huge building. But as we speak now, that building has only been built, you know, to the quarter level. And standing open, the whole structure is open to the sky. Since last year, when you follow the media reports, apparently the contractor was paid before the job was complete. And in the process, got insolvent and he left. That property or that project is still standing there. Now my question is, has the National Department have got any oversight responsibility over the Provincial Department? And if so, are they aware of this project that is there in Kimberley, which is incomplete, and the money that is mentioned by the media there is, you know, multi-million. Thank you.
I'm also from the Northern Cape, so we invite the department to come and visit Kimberley and the Big O. This was a joint venture between Public Works, Department of Economic Affairs and Tourism. And it's got the issue, but I won't deal with that now. Is there a follow-up?
Mr. Chairman, one talks about money going into a big hole. That's the problem with Kimberley.
Well,
As if the money lands in the big hole, you won't get hold of it because it's always deep and it's covered in water. And there's not one big hole, there's five holes. Two big ones and three small ones. But come and visit Kimberly, that's a commercial. We allow the department to respond.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the department
for bringing
you say acting accounting officer. We appreciate that. Now, I think that I must also appreciate my friend, Mr. Henderson. He knows that we had a lot of discussion around this incentive issue. I see today, this technology is very nice. I'm sorry, that added that the Select Committee on Finance recommendation. You see now, Mr. Henderson, we have a weapon now. It's called the Money Bills Amendment Procedure and Related Matters Act. There, we're not going to make recommendations and recommendations that blow into the big hole in Kimberley. Now, you have to account for those recommendations now in terms of this act in front of us. But I appreciate that at least you recognize that the Select Committee did raise those matters. And I'm not sure if today we have really changed our stance. We convinced. Honorable Lee is asking that how come other municipalities qualify, others don't, and probably some of those who don't qualify could be those who really are in real need of this support in the your rural municipalities. But I saw one of the slides saying they all qualify, and I don't know what it meant, but there was a slide that says there's a different dispensation for them. But the issue really, I thought, but I don't know how you repeat your question now of your 500. So the department says, can I use my own words and say you are on track? You say you're kind of on track in terms of creating those 500 jobs. I wish we could get a report on that on track. What does this on track give me? Because I think that we are all interested in ensuring that you succeed. But the concern that I do have, when the President opened Parliament this year to the State of the Nation address, when he spoke about this EPWP or your work opportunities, whatever you call them, he also spoke about the length of time that would involve. Now, we don't hear that mention here. Of that. Is it going to be your own sometimes 3 months at the most or 2 weeks or what those old opportunities for? How do you envisage it? And I think that we are also appreciate the fact that you say it's across departments. That report would really appreciate to have it so that we know that Department of Health, what is it, what contribution is it making to the creation of this job, whatever department you call them. I think that it would be appreciated. So my last comment is around the, again, I think the call is around the incentive, the provinces
know that is giving much importance. This is what we need to do, needs to be done. I don't know if other people have a choice not to do it, but marching orders means that everyone will move in this direction. That's why then the question comes, how much? How come some people qualify, in other words, those who volunteer, those who don't, they have a choice not to at the club, and not to volunteer their services and do other things. So, if we could clarify this statement. But just to appreciate the agenda here about your report, it was not necessarily referred to today. What is it called? The Property Demolition Act. Well, thank you very much. We won't go into it today, but we appreciate that.
Thank you, Honorable Shikoni. Honorable Guni. You're right, correct.
Just one short question. I'd like to find out what the difference they conduct is registered when they start a project. As well as an example, the Kimberley Prison, they wanted about 60 hectares, but they used just over half, 27 hectares. And with the 23 remaining, a problem with the size of the as far as the environmental impact side was concerned. So that's why I'm asking if do they first do the study and see if the project is viable or not, and what are the externalities thereafter, if they are.
Chairperson, on way forward, I note the third bullet to establish credible asset register. Now, I served on the Portfolio Committee of Public Works, I think in 1999-2000. And at that time already, we had been making a big noise about having an asset register. Now, 9 years on, if we are still talking of establishing a credible asset register, then, Chair, I fear for the future of our country. If it takes a Department of State 10 years merely to establish a credit, and it's not done yet, Chair, I hope that in another 10 years our successors here will not refer back that 20 years ago these questions were already asked. So, Chair, I think we must have some solid response. Do you have an asset register? If you had, if it's an incredible one, let's see its incredibility, make it available. And how long will it take you to make it credible? Thank you, Chair.
That was a clear question. Department, you can respond.
List of questions, Chairperson. Can I ask my colleague then to respond to the following questions that deals with APWP specific? That would be the question of qualification in terms of municipalities allocations, as well as why others are eligible and others are not. Then specifically to that, then I'll deal with the rest. Thank you, Stan.
Thank you, Mr. May. The question of whether municipalities have a choice to make a contribution. So when we put it like on the slide deck for eligibility, it is actually simply based on the main criterion of reporting, which means even if, let's say, EPWP projects would be happening in municipalities, the National Department of Public Works wouldn't know about it until such time as it is actually reported on. That's why you will see in terms of the incentive payment, a key criterion would be that you have to report the project on the MIS. And so it's not a case of that we make the call whether it's almost like do you want to participate or not? What we are saying is, National Treasury has said 4.1 billion rand available over the MTF. And a key criteria that they have put down would be, show us credible or data with integrity. Because what you don't want to do would be to make payments willy-nilly, and just all that you do is be attracting the AG's attention with regard to the way that we handle our finances. So that is the question of whether or not. So we don't make a call. Of course, we would expect all national, provincial, and local government to participate in the EPWP or to make a contribution to the EPWP. All we are saying, the only way for us to verify that would be when it's actually contributed, when it's actually captured on the data.
I'm sorry, sir. You know, English is my, I don't know, maybe it's a first language. For me, it could be a third, fourth, fifth language.
Do you know the
You know, I really sometimes fail to understand what people are conveying. I mean, the question is very clear. I think that one of the members, I don't know whether it's Honorable Mkhoro, somebody asked a clear question around coordination. And as we have been sitting here, this question has been going on and on. It's a threat on coordination. The president makes a statement. Was it on the 6th of June, no, of May? No, not 9th of May, 2009. There will be EPW, what you call the work. This is what is expected to do. One expects that each department goes to its own corner and say, what is it that we're going to do? Now, one of the colleagues speaks about your coordination. And if you do it as a national department, clearly, we have 9 provincial departments. Clearly, it means that you go to them and then you ask them to do. Now, you're saying to us, as national department, you don't know what is going on in Zimbabwe. You might not know. Is that what you're telling us? What we want to hear from you is, what is it that you're doing to coordinate this thing, to ensure that 283 municipalities are participating in this project? That is what we want to hear. Not in terms of choice or you start saying that you're not saying it's choice is the way you're putting it. But we want you to say what is it exactly. These are the matching orders. You are supposed to coordinate. What is it that you are doing to coordinate these things? So.
Okay, Chairperson.
Not the volunteering of the water story, but you are supposed to be telling them that look, orders must we are expected to report on this. Where are your programs of this of this project? That is what we want to hear. Thank you.
Chairperson, if I'm allowed.
Please hold, Honorable Mashile.
Yeah, and just to add what Sokol is saying, they should be talking to those municipalities and say, what is that we are doing? Submit within this particular. And if the municipality doesn't submit anything, then they should actually visit them and say, what's the problem? Mm-hmm. Because services have to be rendered, job opportunities have to be created, and the president has promised people it is policy and it needs to be implemented.
Yesterday, the same thing appeared. The monitoring of programs, the monitoring of projects, the monitoring of what we are doing, it comes up again here. We must not wait for the municipality to register a event. We must go and see if it has been done. Then what is that oversight role of the department?
Chairperson, thank you very much.
Do you work with the Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Agricultural Affairs?
That is correct.
In your own corner?
That is correct.
Sure.
That is correct. I just want to explain that. Number one, the council provides the Department of Public Works, national and provinces, in terms of Schedule 4. To answer the question directly, the responsibility of integration
coordination, monitoring and oversight in terms of the execution of programs, amongst others, including EPWP, is done through a structure called MINMEC, whereby you have the Minister of Public Works with all provincial MECs responsible for public works. Two, you also have SAGA represented at that structure, so they are in a position to understand the strategy and the policy of Department of Public Works, national and provincial. So the question of coordination and integration does take place at that level. Provinces report and we can identify and interact with municipalities which are not performing in terms of their targets. So when I say our infrastructure is in place, I'm not talking about things that I do not necessarily have my fingers on the pulse in terms of those things. I give assurance that we're in charge of the situation. We have structures in place to do monitoring and evaluation of what will happen on the ground. It's unfortunate, maybe now, we do not necessarily have time to present you with the full details, which you can do at the point in time, so that we give you the full details of performing municipalities and what are we doing about those particular kind of situations in terms of intervention.
At that point, I think you can start preparing such documents.
That is correct, we'll do so. I think we have a presentation in terms of the laptop that we have now. If we have more time, we can still proceed up until late in the night so that we clarify everything. Do you have it?
Okay.
We'll come to that once, but I want to go to the other questions so that I can actually put the whole perspective right. The question pertaining to feasibility study. Yes, in every project like the Kimberley precinct, which we call correctional services facilities today, you do conduct feasibility studies. Our client is the Department of Correctional Services. As a result, you're correct, to remember, in terms of the environmental impact assessment, which is outstanding on other matter, but in the matter we're dealing with the Department of Environmental Affairs to ensure that finalize the EIA thereof. Partly it has been done, but it's not been whole, because the estimate in terms of the Department of Correctional Services there did not actually indicate that they will need more hectares than they actually would need land. Remember, a project of that magnitude, which will amount to about 900 million at the cost, requires also additional space for potential growth of other facilities. So you need to provide for that. Obviously, you need to hear it to do that also at some stage. The question of the big hole, in terms of the, fortunately, I was at Kimberley yesterday. I'm aware of that particular program. To get more details, we can get the details from the Department of Public Works and Economic Development, which are official, but not necessarily media reports, because media interpretation of information might be incorrect, but we can make that information available to the FFC so that we know exactly what we're referring to in terms of credibility of information. The question of we have more details because we're on top of the situation in terms of things now. If you want to comment it at a later stage, I can provide more details. What we have done, how far are we, what is happening, what is the rate of the situation. No media reports. We are on top of that situation in terms of what's happening in cases there. That is correct. What has been the case in the past is the following. Recording of participating members in terms of EPWP in the past, in terms of phase one, was that without incorporating their identity numbers. Now, what is causing delay in terms of recording is verification of identity numbers. But we are fast-tracking that process in terms of the management information system that we have. That's why, because when you allocate money in terms of incentive grants, you need to be 100% sure that you're allocating to the right person and you've got the right basis to do that. Because if you don't have an ID number and you don't know whether it's in the project or not, then you have a problem. The question of assisting municipalities and ensuring that we are able to confess on what is transpiring. In my overview, I indicated that we have established a relationship with IDT as well as with the BSA. So we know where there are problems and where there are challenges and where is intervention required. So that matter has been handled too. We have also established, in order to ensure that municipalities access land for further development, a chief directorate on rural development within the Department of Public Works, so that we fast track the availability of land to municipalities. Remember, we also do that very same process with land affairs in terms of listing. And that has an impact on your asset register. So there's nothing in reality which is called an asset register which is complete like this book. It's a system, it's a registering system, it gets updated from time to time. I'll come to that so that I put perspective right in terms of the creation of the asset register. The roofing, green with algae and dust of government buildings. We are aware of that particular situation. We have a program called rehabilitation of underutilized or unused government buildings, which we also discuss as a program at MINMET, so that it does not necessarily affect national Department of Public only in terms of its rollout. It's been rolled out in all provinces. The challenge is that in the past, the availability of funds ensured that the program moves much more faster than it's moving now. Has been a problem because obviously budget on empty basis and other priorities have been there. I don't agree with the part in terms of the building of government to say prior to 1994 a lot of state buildings were sold to the private sector at a certain rate and not that in them. It's a different exercise to get into in terms of explaining where we come from historically and where are we today and what are we doing about the situation. There's also an aspect of the question of unintended consequences of relying on consultants. That is incorrect. We are very mindful of the role of consultants. In terms of if it's a look at the Department of Public Works, yes, you do have professional consultants and engineers doing work for us on a specified basis. And consultants, in terms of their rates, they have been gazetted. You cannot underpay, you cannot overpay. You need to know what you're doing so that you're able to actually relate to a proper situation of say, he has done work, or she has done work, and the work is costed at Scottish Catholic. So we appreciate the input in terms of saying we must open up our eyes very sharply on the question of ensuring that consultants do not necessarily overdo what they should be doing with us in terms of the financial implications. We've taken a clear position in terms of this particular aspect, and I want to put the perspective right here first, that we do not use consultants to assist us in implementing EPWP or labor intensive with a view to achieve the 500,000 job opportunities. We are doing it ourselves. I want to reaffirm that we have IDT, Independent Development Trust, which is a public entity that reports to the Minister of Public Works, which is handling the whole incentive grant delivery mechanism. So it's been done by government through its own agents. I therefore say, yes, we have the capacity to roll out to achieve our target. And we're moving in a direction whereby, like I said, we're monitoring the situation on a day-to-day basis. And there will always be continuous improvement because things don't remain static every day. They require to change. Chairperson, lastly, as a response from my side, is the following. Do you have an asset register? Is it credible or not? The answer is yes, we have an asset register. The second one is yes, it is credible. May I also add that in a situation where you deal with an asset register, you can't have an asset register fixed, and I want to say fixed, and say, one day Shepherd will bring you this book and say it's an asset register which is fixed. It is a system called the Property Management Information System, whereby it has basics. The first basic thing that you need in an asset register is to determine location of an asset and ownership thereof. And you must have records which you can print out using a printout that will tell you that the asset has got a title deed number, it's got where it is located and who owns it. It is correct that there are certain challenges whereby certain processes to determine what I might call what was hidden as property through through the vetting process jointly with the lender side. It's continuing. So we have an asset register. It's getting updated on a regular basis. So the notion of 10 years or 20 years to come, whatever the case might be, actually requires to be put in perspective and the context of the God's right. To say, some you can touch in terms of asset register, but you must know it's not basic. The system. So, with those few words, Chairperson, I think I put clarity in terms of some of the outstanding issues. Unless there was an omission in my response to the question that was raised, I will still be available to answer them. Thank you.
Regarding the issue of municipalities, on the 12th of August, the next Wednesday, this department will appear before the Standing Committee on Appropriation. Chairperson of that committee just indicated that's a meeting where you can then submit your report on the municipalities.
That is correct.
Chairperson will do that. Sena was indicating to me that the report is here, but it's making available at that time.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. So, I think I've dealt with all the other issues. The principle has been to be very specific and not to make general statements, but to respond specific issues, but there's also one thing that I did not deal with, Chairperson. When we refer to a house in a specific area or in a specific township or in a specific suburb, you would require specifics so that you can be able to can focus on the problem and resolve it. I'm aware, Honourable Member, that at some point you indicated that the houses that public works might require to dispose thereof, because it's not our business in particular to keep houses. We have a disposal policy which has been amended now so that we can actually dispose of certain assets that we think are not necessarily assets of strategic nature. Because, for example, if you have a house, like you say, Honourable Member, that's required to be maintained. We spend money to maintain those particular houses, others do not maintain, that's the truth that you know. But it is too costly under the economic conditions that we find ourselves in now to maintain houses, other than to say, let's sell them at market value so that people can actually have ownership of the particular houses and we reduce our level of responsibility in terms of maintenance. Thank you.
I could have been, but I asked a specific question around the kind of jobs now that public works. Work opportunities or that you're doing, that what is the minimum, what you call it, period that a person could work? I mean, the president indicated that it's going to be longer than your usual 3 weeks. In Gauteng, there was a program called, I don't forget the name, but people would work only for 3 weeks. Are we talking about 3 weeks again? Or are we talking about at least a much longer period that people can be able to...
From a particular member, we're not talking about 3 weeks. The duration of a project and the extent of labor intensity in terms of that project determines the period on which a specific job will last in terms of that particular project. However, let me give the chance also to give some quantifiable information to say if a job is for 6 months or for 12 months, and then how will it work in practical terms so that we can give you some level of comfort that you're talking something beyond the 3 weeks, which is not necessarily very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I should state for the record that we do have a database, we have a proper monitoring and regulation system. And I'm personally responsible for that. This is a single project of 3 weeks on our database. It was never there for the first 5 years of the program. It stopped there in quarter one of the program. That is just for the record.
Sorry, you said it was never there.
It was not on our database, sir. No.
There was a program in housing that was called, this must be,
I'll tell you now. I'll tell you the name. People were working for 3 weeks sometimes.
May I? Thank you, Chair. Across the EPWP, there are four sectors we're working across. Infrastructure sector, social sector, environment, culture, and currently the new phase, non-state sector. We have to state, obviously, in projects in the infrastructure sector, there would be, if a low-volume road takes 6 months to build, then the duration of that particular work opportunity would be for 6 months. That is the nature of it. But across the EPWP, in the social sector and the environment and culture sector, where people are working for a period up to 2 years and beyond. So, with regard to the duration of the work opportunities, it varies per sector. What we have specifically endeavored at the EPWP phase two, say, there's a program that members from KZN, if there are any members here, would be quite familiar with, such as Zibambele, where people work continuously over a period, and every year the contracts are renewed, and so there are some very good examples, and our direction for or guidance for EPWP two is to get the at least 100 days for work per year across all projects.
Yes, thank you, Chair. It's a question which I would like him to answer as he speaks there now, regarding this public works and the people who participate in this project. When they started, when the public works, advanced public works program was started, it used to take a huge number of people, and especially those who were working on the road and cutting trees, you know, opening the road and cutting the grass, firing the road more safely than any other thing. It used to take quite a number of people, but it has since the last few years now, according to my observation, they have now introduced using tractors, cutting the grass with the mower that is, you know, pulled by the tractor. Now, if you look at the people who are working there, you find it has been drastically reduced because now they are employing machinery. Where else I thought they are employing people to work with their own hands so that it can make space for more people to be, you know, participating in this project. Thank you.
Yes, on the N7, yes, between Garies, Kamiskru and Springbok, they're still working with by hand. That's my constituency, because I usually stop there and talk to them.
Thank you, Chair. If that's the case, honourable member, that would be totally anathema to the EPWP is all about. Because the whole drive around EPWP is to get rid of machinery and to maximise employment. That is the whole drive. So we would be very interested to know if we could get the details. We would certainly follow up on that particular matter.
You can start wrapping up.
Okay, now we're wrapping up. I appreciate the points and the comments made by honourable members. As a department, and in closing, from our side, we will go and look and provide adequate reports in terms of the issues that have been raised this afternoon, so that we provide some more details to the extent that we become much more open and clarity in terms of the kind of interventions that we have. I also want to take this opportunity to say the next mini-MEC that we'll have, whereby the minister and the MECs from other provinces, both in terms of transport, road, and public works, will be on the 20th and 21st. I've really requested that honorable colleagues raised in terms of grant cutting, road marking, so that the visibility can be enhanced and can be seen to be refocused in terms of that. On that note, we close. Thank you.
Thank you to the acting accounting officer for being here with your whole team and doing a good job this afternoon. Hello. Honourable members, yes, when we go on our interview week, the 7th to the 11th of September, this is some of the issues that we can go and check in our provinces. And if it's not in line, bring it back to the specific committees. Thank you for the department. If you have to leave, we will release you. Then we will take Salga. Salga's ready. And then after Salga, we will take the Department of Education. Just to the Department of Education, how many officials are here? Only the one. The Director General is not here. Can you locate the person? You see what the tendency is? The attitude of the committee?
Can I indicate the Director General of the DGNG at this point in time?
You're right.
As I explained before the meeting, Chairperson, the Director General had to leave for Durban for the presidential invita with school principal. He was scheduled to attend the meeting when the meeting was originally scheduled for the 12th of August, so he could not make it for today.
Are you organizing your IT?
Thank you.
If you say public questions, welcome to listen with us.
Characteristic of revenue mixes of the
different type of municipalities. You know, the big cities, service charges and property rates and government grants are, service charges are the main major income generator. Similar thing for the big cities or the urban centers. But in the rural municipalities, the income base is very low. I mean it's unlikely to grow substantially because they're rural in nature. There's very little economic development. And therefore, the grants for those rural municipalities, I mean, will border on to 70% of the income. And I think that this is important to take into account when we look at some of these policy positions that the FSC is making. Chair, I'm not going to go through the comments, and maybe people can read through the comments and we can engage with them in the discussion. Again, the characteristic of operating expenditure, you know, the rural municipalities, the one problem is because I suppose they haven't really converted to the new accounting standards that most of the income is still sitting as other. And this is maybe something that's quite urgent that needs to be tackled. That you can't have, you know, in a municipality more than 50% of the income categorized as other. Actually, we don't know where it's going or what they're using their money for. So in terms of the accounting reform, that process needs to be expedited and supported, particularly in that category of municipalities. You know, the breakdown is very similar for the big cities and the little towns. Financial management capacity, Chair. This is not a full sample of all the municipalities. We only managed to get about 100 odd samples. But out of that, from the S1, you can see that the year that the CFO is actually in the municipality is actually 2.5 years on the average. Municipal experience is fine, and the local government experience is great. The problem is, again, in the rural municipality. The CFO is there on the average of 1.2 years, and he or she has only got two years of municipal experience. So this is really where really the concern is. Chair, I'm not going to talk about audit opinions. I think maybe a lot has been said over the years and we can engage on that. Okay. Chair, this is really the point that we're trying to make. You know, is that there needs to be a differentiation. And that has to be a key basis for our policy making. And therefore, even the recommendations of the FSC have to take into account these characteristics of different types of municipalities. It's not about choosing this a metro and moving funds from metro to rural or whatever. But I think we need to look at each category of municipality on its merit and deal with the challenges that they have. Those challenges are very different in nature. The urban centers have a diversified revenue base, differential financial sustainability issues. Rural, however, are unable to engage with significant wealth due to the small economic base. We know that. Rural municipalities have different service delivery challenges in respect of backlogs and how those backlogs are addressed.
And sorry, Madam Chair. I think that the information that we get, I think that the audit report is. Oh, now you're getting into it.
We're going into it.
Okay.
I really just wanted to set the scene, and this is really the basis on which we're trying to make some of our comments. As far as the rental housing, and Chair, we focus on those ones that primarily, are engaging around local government functions. That we support some of the FSC recommendations, that there be a review of the eligibility criteria for accessing social housing capital restructuring grants to allow for projects falling outside the designated restructuring zones to access funding. We think that this review will improve access and supply of rental housing stock, and it will the review of the income band that they're suggesting. We think should also take into account the current global economic recession and the increasing levels of unemployment. On the management and financing of road infrastructure, I think, Chair, there was a lot of discussion around this, and we were really just beginning to allude to some of the challenges. We think priority has to be given to the clarification of road responsibilities between this district and local municipalities. especially in those outside the metro. The roles, responsibility, and functions are not clear. The maintenance and repair work is therefore falling through the cracks because no one is actually taking responsibility because the classification and allocation of responsibility and roles is separately done. The National Department, and we've engaged them, the National Department of Transport, is of the view that this process of classification is a provincial responsibility. And we also feel, Chair, that this shouldn't be based only on the class of road, but we have to complete the allocation of responsibility. If you just wait for the exercise to get complete and we actually don't start immediately allocating responsibility, I mean, this problem of maintenance and repair falling through the cracks will continue. Because we're responding to the issue of financing of road infrastructure, the historical funding of road infrastructure was assumed to be from the local fiscus, and particularly in those S3 type of municipalities. I mean, that really was never possible. And therefore, the point, Chair, is that we're saying that it's not only about increasing finance for road infrastructure, or it's really about, you know, putting in place a new baseline on how maintenance of roads should actually take place within those areas. Access assessment of universal access to water and sanitation. Chair, we support the recommendations around the establishment of the National Water Regulator. And we believe that this National Water Regulator responsibility should really cover the whole life cycle of water services. And I mean, just to explain what we mean by the life cycle of the water service. The primary sector, where the low water sits in dams, that should be covered within this regulator and the responsibility of the regulator. The bulk purification of water through the water boards, mainly in urban areas, and in a lot of the poorer areas, in rural areas, the purification of water is actually left to the rural municipalities. And again, we understand the challenges that those municipalities have, and therefore you're finding in a lot of rural municipalities, those S3s that I was referring to, those water services actually beginning to fail because funding is not available. However, in a big metro, I mean, you know, the municipality is merely a distributor, and you buy the water and you look after your wastewater management. So therefore, I mean, there's really a challenge around rural municipalities and how we're going to, you know, deal with that particular challenge. Funding has to really take into account those schemes that are sitting in those municipalities and the maintenance of those schemes. Around the assessment of the institutional and fiscal capacity support, the current institutional and financial capacity support mechanism for local government treats all municipalities in the same manner, regardless of the significant differences in the context and the capability. Chair, we have the opinion that, you know, the recommendation that local government be central to setting the agenda and capacity building program is, you know, we agree with that. We also support the call for the need for coordination and alignment of grants to support a comprehensive program around financial capacity. Chair, SALGA has got a member on the FFC, who's actually one of the commissioners. We have two seats for the FFC. And in fact, what he indicated is that on this chapter, there was no research undertaken. I mean, it's really a principal point around the need for coordination, that they were emphasizing. What we would like to suggest is really that there's a need to assess the capacity building grants and to look at the impact of these grants, the various grants that operate in the area of fiscal capacity support and financial management support. And I mean, these grants include the local government CETA funding for training, the MSIG, Sienza Manje, as well as, you know, the financial management grant. So there's a lot of grants going into this area of support. What we're calling for is really a need for an impact as to, you know, whether we're actually getting a bang for our buck. Because the results doesn't really show the over billion rand maybe possible investment that we're actually putting into financial management capacity every year. So some of the other points that we want to make, and these were the ones that we wanted to highlight that were not covered in the FSC submission. And the reason for this, again, you know, this is the point that was made by some of the representatives at the FSC, is that they decided to focus on some key areas, and they wanted to prioritize some key areas of research. So this is really, these points are really not to say that the FSC has done the job, but we just really wanted to highlight a couple of points. The further work is really required around functions that are not local government functions in terms of constitution, but get assigned through sectoral legislation. For example, disaster management. That local government functions that are not part of the basket of four basic services must be especially, that needs to be provided to poor households, need to be further, you know, broken down. And particularly, you know, we need to begin including the need for public transport in this regard. There is also no clarity as to how costs, especially operating costs, associated with providing services related to concurrent functions should be funded. And I mean, the one, you know, issue is, for example, library. But if you look at library,
that the impact negative on them. I think that
allow them to present all those matters. Then it's only maybe when we deliberate now where we can say, do we think that it's important to do we agree with what Sarah is saying or not agree? But I think that for the purpose of presentation, maybe we should maybe we should allow them to present and also engage, because these issues do impact in what we call it, in their course of what we call it, duty on them, and impact financially the way I hear from the presentation. Maybe I think we should allow them.
There are the agreement on this?
The request could be that maybe rather than if it could be precise, you know, to this issue, still have education here, and the comrade is asking us to proceed, but he's going to say it himself.
No, you see the problem I'm having. The presenter is saying our member in SALCA in one point under the issues raised by the FSC. Our member told us that they have raised things but there was no research conducted. I don't think that is right. If he gets defeated there, he comes and reports to SALCA that the second is in there, SALCA will come and bring those issues here. I don't think that is the right way to do it. Now, again, on these issues, the same member and FALC, the FFC could not they could not agree to include these things or whatever. Now they are creating a backdoor into parliament. To me, that is a failure of FALC as an organization to represent municipalities well. Now they will always create all these quick parties to parliament, and we all agree that the parliament. I agree in that particular way, but if members feel strong that we must continue with this, I don't feel sorry for those who are not represented in the FFC, who when they come here, we expect them to respond to those issues, and they don't have the opportunity to raise issues that in their view, the FFC could have raised.
Maybe you have made a point. My understanding is that Comrade Machine did raise that how I structured SALCO yesterday. And SALCO spelled out in terms of the constitution how they are structured. And if it is FFC. And I don't think that it was not my understanding that SALCO constitutes part of the of FFC. But I think that what we really need to do maybe is to, rather than we're debating whether SALCA should present or not present, I think that we're taking a longer time on that. If the issue is, we revisit it. But maybe we should allow SALCA to clarify the issue that you raised. What do they mean? So that we can take a decision based on that. What do they mean about that representation or someone that was not agreeing with some of the things. So.
Please clarify that.
Chair, I mean, really, this is really not meant to be bringing anything through the back door. In fact, in October, we will be going to the budget forum, and a lot of these issues we will be raising at the budget forum as well. But what the reason why I think we thought we'll raise some of these is really just bring to the notice of the of the committee, you know, some of the other challenges that municipalities face. What, as far as the research of FFC is concerned, I mean, we do have a commissioner, we have a member that sits on the FFC. And in our briefing with him and our discussion, because, I mean, we have to engage with him if he's sitting on the FFC, what he indicated is that FFC prioritized, you know, what was important. So it wasn't really about
struggle about one issue FSC must undertake or not. In fact, you know, they agree that some of these issues also need to be dealt with. But obviously you can't research everything. So in fact he agreed that, you know, we should just bring to your notice some of these other challenges that really you know, face municipalities. But really this is going to be the basis on which we will build our argument at the budget forum. So it's not, you know, the process for the Division of Revenue Act for 2010-11, actually this is the build up to that, you know. These type of processes are built up to that.
But what made those people to jump? And
but also again that what made the CFO in Johannesburg Metro to stay for 15 years. And this further worries about the real consequences. We know the issue of steel here generally in the country. We are not producing enough people to actually take our economy on. But in terms of sector, then we are seeing this shift from one corner to the other by skilled people. And is there any particular side that Salga is doing to assist its own municipality, you know, to advise them? Why are they having these challenges? And the municipalities in the rural areas, I'm sure maybe I'm repeating this for the second time, if not the third time, is that you are having rural municipalities which we say they lack capacity and skills. But for some reason, some of these municipalities are being accredited to the water services authority. In other ways, is that when a municipality now is the water services authority, that means it is responsible for bulk water supply. And everybody knows what are the challenges of procurement in local municipalities. Procurement systems. And when you are in charge of bulk water supply, and when a pump, a raw water pump breaks down, which actually costs about 40,000 or 40 million, I mean 4 million, depending on the size of the pump. How long is the municipality going to take to actually get that pump repaired? When you've got all of these other procurement processes, that bureaucracy in procurement in municipalities in terms of the municipal finance. My question is actually based on the basis that we are seeing local municipalities don't have capacity in terms of staff, personnel, in terms of systems. But we have the same municipality being accredited to the water service authority that they have to now to engage in an agreement, a water board, and find that the water board is actually better capacitated to do the things that the municipality. But now, the board is the municipality who actually determines the pace at which the water board can supply water to the municipality. You know, it's where you find that there's an officer who must approve payment to the water board of 1.5 million. This officer is earning only 9,000 a month. And again, it's not capacitated or competent to take these decisions and stand by that this is correct, I'm signing this 1.5 million. That must go to the water board. And then the person doesn't run circles to approve things because it's not capacitated, it's not believing in the decision that it's making. And what is Salga saying about those municipalities? Because at the end of the day, there's an impact. As we have heard from finance yesterday, that we have water boards that are not paid. And when you go to those municipalities that are not paying those two water boards, all those water boards are the ones that are operating the low fare. And it doesn't work by the money. And the people that are giving oversight to those water boards are not competent to do that over the water board. And hence you have this problem that they are being afraid, you know, to approve things that they have to approve. And the Salga should achieve this municipality. Then what is that they are saying about that?
Question is very clear. Are there any other questions?
Thanks, Chair. From the introduction, when you read it in Africa, that talk mainly an attitude. I don't know in English. That's us and they. Because if you can read here, sustainable financing and policy development for local government is necessary if they are to take up their departmental mandate. When you read the statement, you know, it seems that if asked, they can do that if they so wish. But what Sarga is doing in order to assist them, in order to support the stable of the Simashi, the friend.
Just one short one. The S form is fine. You're showing that they don't have a problem or challenges as far as raising their revenue. But as for the other revenue and the money is granted, just tell us what the situation is.
Honorable member.
Yes, sir.
The S form is fine.
Thank you, Chairperson. When addressing the issue of vacancy rate and the impairment of technical services, where we know technicians, where we know that small municipalities cannot afford such costs, and because you realize that maybe it's a small municipality that needs an engineer or someone to give that advice, instead of getting consultants, has SALGA, I don't know whether it's wrong, ever thought of sharing expertise among small municipalities? That's just what I would like to ask.
One more, Charlie.
Thank you, sir. Pardon my ignorance insofar as SALGA's money is put down. On daily basis, familiarizing myself. But reading from the presentation, it would seem to me that a number of issues raised by the FFC are issues that SALGA was even aware of even before the FFC made comment or raised that issue. Now, my observation is correct. Surely it would have been better for them to come here and say, we agree with the FFC, and this is what the local government, are doing in terms of this. Because those are the issues, like the issues of capacity building. Those are the issues that they have raised a long time ago. Skills of testing and all those, that they are saying that. But in that way, we say, we agree with the FFC on this and this and this. And they are not telling us what is it that is being done. Let alone the point that they have known about those things even before this report of the FFC. How come is that the truth? Thank you.
Any other questions? None?
That's a small comment from my side. I see on the slide for justification for differential classification. That one is the pity that the copies are not and for us it's difficult to comment. But I did comment on the side of the water sector. The S1 and S3 have similar characteristics from a sector of perspective. This is due to informal settlement. S3 is due to rural areas. S2 have limited spectrum. Now, you said your S1 includes your metro and some other cities. So you say, and then on the finding, summary of finding, not that there's no page, but that's about differentiation on a key basis for policy. I'm not sure if you're seeing where I'm. Yeah. Again, bullet number 2 says all categories of money funds have necessary what you call correct or it is an assumption. In other words, Johannesburg Metro and Ubuntu are the same in the eastern Cape. Or Cape Town and what is it, Santana or what? And then at the same. I know that the presentation is normally summarized, you know. It does not, I just want to understand what message is being conveyed here by this two things. Chair, thank you very much. Chair, maybe I should follow up with a comment around the role of Sauga, because I mean, I think Chair, we're a small organization, I mean, particularly from a professional point of view. But I mean, the key role of SALGA is really to advocate the key issues on behalf of municipalities, to support and advise municipalities, and to represent the interests of municipalities. I mean, that's really why, in fact, and if members were at the select committee workshop, I think yesterday, I think the CEO went through the mandate of SALGA in quite a lot of detail, together with the business plan and the work that SALGA is doing. And, you know, so that it's been covered in that discussion. But maybe just to go to some of the specific points. I think around the rental housing, I think what we're saying is that if you're going to move the bands around, I mean, the lowest band is actually going to get bigger. And therefore, you need to take that into account, you know, when they do the research. When they review the band. In fact, FFC, all they're recommending is that the band be reviewed. And that's really just the point we're making there. John, on this slide here, and really, it was really just indicative. You know, it's not really saying that we're going to make policy decisions on that particular municipality there, but it was indicative to say that there's a cluster of municipalities that have, you know, pretty good, a good economic base. There's a cluster of them which are, you know, okay, you know, not too bad, but there's a cluster of them that are very poor. And really, that was all that we're trying to make in this. And therefore, leading up to, you know, from these slides, we're really trying to make the point that policy decisions, you know, or whether it's the Division of Revenue Act or whatever it is, need to take into account that we have different categories of municipalities who are geographically very different, the population bases are very different, their financial capacity is very different, their developmental challenges are very different. But they all have developmental challenges, but it might be different. The challenge in the metro is very different to a rural municipality. And this is, it's just a policy principle that we trying to put onto the table. So that when positions come from various government departments, you know, we'd like to keep asking the same question. What does EPWP mean for the metro? What does it mean for the rural municipalities? And if the honorable member remembers last year, in fact, it was a discussion between SALGA and yourself around EPWP that we said, you know, your proposal doesn't make sense. You can't put a threshold for rural municipalities. But for the metro, it's fine. In fact, I think the member was actually saying leave the metro out. And really that's really, I think, the debate that we need to continuously have around all policy matters. And therefore, we will be bringing this as a context around various areas of research of the FFC. So that's the point there. I think as far as the issues around skills, I mean, like, sound is involved, I think, in various sort of development programs, capacity building programs. I mean, around financial management, you know, SALGA convenes a budget week every week in all provinces, doing training for counselors, training for financial managers. SALGA is involved in the work that the Department of Corporate Governance does around the national program. Sorry? Thank you.
a whole lot of training that they undertake. We've got a program with the CETAS and this university around financial management training. Around the point that the colleagues were making, that it's not just about the senior management, but it's also about the middle management, you know, basic financial skills. How does involve the Department of Corporate Governance in that commitment, dealing with some of the audit improvement processes and capacity building.
Based on that point, in the Northern Cape, 17 municipalities received a disclaimer from the agency. You can start in the Northern Cape.
In fact, I mean, we had a meeting with since we're talking about Northern Cape, I mean, with the SALGA representatives, you know, from the province there. And Northern Cape is a real serious problem. I mean, a problem not just the outcomes, the audit outcomes, but also the issue of skills retention. I mean, apparently, you know, if a person operating in the position of a CFO is there for more than 18 months, he's gone. And he gets taken up by a district or a more wealthier local municipality who pays slightly better. And this is what the representatives are saying. And skills retention is, in fact, probably one of the challenges that we have over and above the training that we need to undertake. So we have been working a lot around the area of training, but I think, you know, the issue of skills retention is also a local municipal, each municipality has to deal with it. It's very difficult as SALGA to be, you know, telling municipalities, do not fire your CFO or pay your CFO more. It's very difficult to do. But you know, it's something that we keep highlighting with those members. As far as training around the water sector is concerned, I mean, SALGA's got an integral partner and is in fact taking up some of the responsibility around the Matibambane training that is currently being rolled out to support those municipalities with the water, who have the water authority function. So that's really something that's underway in quite a big way in partnership with the Department of Water Affairs. But I think at the same time, you know, I know the Executive Director for Infrastructure has been calling for a review of the sector around water boards. So that, you know, so there's a uniform approach in dealing with that sector, this is of the water itself, of the water sector. What was the point about the developmental mandate in order to, it's really not if, but in order to be effective in delivering the developmental mandate, sustainable financing, is necessary. So it's really not to say, you know, if financing is not available, you can't deliver. I mean, I think in the current circumstances, I mean, municipalities are trying to deliver. And I mean, obviously, there are challenges in some, and in other areas, there are some areas of success. I think those S4 municipalities, remember, that actually refers to districts. Districts that have no water responsibility. In fact, they have very few functions. And therefore, you know, it's a municipality that gets grants. Statistics that get grants, and the primary responsibility is really working with locals and partnering with locals, delivering services, supporting local municipalities. So it's a category of municipalities of districts that we found that they're sitting with a lot of surpluses for that matter in the bank account, and I think Treasury is actually aware of this issue, and there are discussions. But it goes back to dealing with the issue of the roles and responsibilities of districts. That's really where the problem actually emanates. And that matter will be resolved hopefully through the local government review process. Because you've got a category of districts that are water authorities and those that are not water authorities, and they actually have very, very few functions. But they get, for example, RSA replacement grant. Because historically they've been getting that. So until we don't review the roles and functions of districts, some of these anomalies will continue. sharing expertise with smaller municipalities. I mean, this is something that we have been testing. In fact, we've been encouraging, for example, even the idea of shared services. And I know in Northern Cape there was an attempt to do something like this around financial systems. You know, I think one of the districts was trying to set up a shared financial system with the locals so that you reach economies of scale. We've also, you know, in Kangala and Amatole, for example, shared an audit committee. And in fact, those are the two districts that have very good audit results. You know, so that is maybe a successful model, but it may not work in every area. You know, because the dynamics between the locals and the districts are not the same everywhere. So yes, I mean, we agree that in fact that is something that we will try and keep trying to push on. Around the FFC, I think I've covered the point in the beginning in terms of the role of SAMHSA. And I think the backlog, in fact, let me just go back to that. I think the number is not here. But this one's about water. Well, the other one's really about the GVA. So two separate points. Yeah. But the point we're saying about water is that if you look in the rural areas, the backlogs are high. You know. But it also goes back to the definition. In the urban areas, water tankers and those basic water services are very easy to provide, even in informal settings. So it comes out with the definition of basic water services. But in the rural areas, it's very difficult to even get the most basic service, even a water tanker, out to a community. And in fact, the point that William was making around, you know, funding a 250-kilometer pipeline for an area. I mean, that's the type of challenge you have in rural areas. So it's not an easy problem to address. But I mean, I think at least we understand the challenges that you have in that category of municipality. Thank you. I think you have commented.
Honourable members, covered with your questions. Satisfied. We thank our colleague from Salga. On his way to the airport, so if you want to leave, we will release you. But again, thank you for your presentation. The next department, the last one, is education. Mr. Trudeau, we give him time to get the IT organized. Members, did you indicate you wanted transport? I just want to check. There was a list circulating. Can you please assist me? Started the meeting, the first sentence was, please indicate who wants transport. Can you? Our good lady will assist you. Yeah, Mr. Trudeau is in office this afternoon. He's got no support on the left or the right.